Aloha, Brendan.
Greetings, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is back. We are on and recording again. We have episode 197 today. On our march to 200, we're like one away from the actual 200th, if you are counting along with us and not using the numbers on the episodes. But
the secret menu 200th episode. The animal fries episode.
But the numerical 200 episode is coming up soon. I've had a couple people ask me what we're doing for that, and I don't know. What are we doing, Brendan?
Oh, it's going to be great, yeah. And it's super top secret, so mm-hmm. Of course we say we don't know, but we totally know, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So stay tuned for that. If you would like to be a part of it or just be a part of any show in general, the best way to get a hold of us is probably ask us in person, because most of you know us in person. but in case you would like to tweet at us or Facebook us or let us know via the Hell 900 email autoresponder on the website, notathingpodcast.com. We actually did get a couple emails this last week to the Hal 900. Did you see those, or do you ever check that email account?
Totally, but why don't you remind me?
Yes. So as you remember, we got an email from a company that is publishing a newsletter about combating drones. it's like they do really listen to us. It's great. Or their algorithm sees the word drone in all of our tweets and then sends it. It did seem kind of form lettery. So if you're out there, company that maybe sent us that email, thanks. But we probably aren't going to buy your actual thing. We might talk about it, but I don't know if we'll actually buy it. But in any case, we're still up and rolling along. We said a couple weeks ago, we crossed over 4 years of recording this this wonderful podcast that we offer for free. So if you'd like to sponsor it, we're still looking for our first sponsor.
I couldn't finish a 4-year college degree, but I can do 4 years of a podcast. If only school had been 1 hour, one day a week.
With the option to skip based on vacations or whatever.
Yeah.
No, yeah, we've been doing pretty well with this, and we're going to continue to do well. One of the things we like to do at the beginning of some of the shows is, because we've done so many, and we've done a lot of kind of topics multiple times, we're going to revisit a couple that we've done in the past. We're starting with one that was kind of a perennial favorite of ours, the Fuck the Police segment. We're talking about the police, specifically in Boston, and how they are running a pilot for body cameras, which on the podcast we've come out and said that we're in favor of. It's a thing. Everyone should have it, but they're running a 100 officer pilot, and they asked for volunteers, and nobody volunteered. So that's not a thing. I mean, that's pretty much pretty indicative of the lack of accountability in the office. So the person in charge there is going to just designate 100 people and give them body cameras to use for the duration of the pilot, which I'm sure will be very eye-opening, and then it hopefully will be expanded to the entire force. I think the way that they should allocate that 100 is that they should just go through on the personnel database, and then anyone that was flagged with anything, they should just give them a body camera immediately.
That's a good idea.
I think it would, if they want to get the most impact right away, you're gonna see it real soon. So, body cameras, they're a thing. If there's anything that is that's right about that whole debacle. It's that we do support the police. That this is a thing we've said multiple times. It's you know, despite our jocularity with the segment, you can thank NWA for that one. But but our whole thing is that you know, despite, you know, being in favor of the police, we're also in favor of accountability and people being treated fairly and right. So body cameras, definitely a thing. In Boston, that pilot program is going to start with 100 cops, and we'll just see how that goes. We'll be watching with great what is it? Great interest. something else that I guess has been watched a lot is the television station Univision. It has one of the kind of largest viewerships, being a Spanish language station primarily, but it's also shaping up to be kind of a media conglomerate onto itself. We talked about it in insert episode here about how they bought a stake in The Onion, of all things, and in a bid to be kind of more relevant to the population of folks that don't necessarily watch TV, which is their primary kind of delivery mechanism for their content. They're apparently going ahead and buying another high-profile website. This time they're going to be buying Gawker Media, which you might know was embroiled in that lawsuit. I think it was Hulk Hogan was suing them for releasing like a sex tape of him, which,
yes,
that's not a thing, but
no,
but you know, but doing so, I guess, you know, and they, you know, it's kind of shock journalism. It's not really even journalism, honestly.
No, but, it's not.
But you know, in doing so, they were rightfully sued by Hulk Hogan, and then now the judgment was something like $140 million. So they were essentially real screwed. So I don't know. I know that the purchase price from Univision is like $135 million. So I don't know if they're just assuming that that will pay for the majority of the judgment, or because they are still appealing it, which I don't know how that's going to work at all.
But, well, I mean, they can appeal it. I don't think they're going to win.
Yeah. but yeah, so I guess Gawker Media holds a lot of properties. They hold, let's see, IO9 and Jezebel and
Gizmodo,
Deadspin, Lifehacker. Yeah, just a bunch of blogs. They all have like a very similar look. And when you click on any of them, there's always a little like paragraph about here on our other blogs. So it's very easy to like get stuck in that ecosystem and never leave. We recommend you click on other things if you do. but just with almost anything on the internet, please use multiple sources.
And that doesn't mean the same first 8 articles that show up in the Google search, because they're all the same article, just rewritten by a different source.
but yeah, I think that's really interesting. I don't know. It doesn't seem like, anyway, that they're making any editorial changes at the companies that they've bought. Like, as far as I know, The Onion is still like awesome. It's still The Onion. So I haven't noticed any cross promotion or anything like that. So that's interesting. I don't know if they're gonna run Gawker in the same way, or if they're gonna really redo that and shake it up. It would be interesting to see what happens, just because it is such a ubiquitous, you know, internet destination, because they have so many points of entry.
I do want to point out the article that you found about this deal was on Ars Technica, and the author of the article has the best Harry Potter name I've ever found.
Oh, really?
His name is Cyrus Farivar. If that man is not a wizard, I'll eat my hat. And in his picture, he is wearing a hat.
That's rad. Cool.
You're a wizard, Cyrus.
His picture should have, you know, been a GIF, so it kind of moves just slightly. Yeah, right. Like his eyes kind of shift back and forth. I'm sure that could be done. Someone out there, you know, if you want to do that for us, feel free to. I don't know if any GIF wizards listen to our show, but if you do, we'd love to have you on the show. That's actually really interesting. I mean, even though we'd be talking about a visual thing on an audio podcast, I think it would still be a thing. So speaking of people that do visual things, we're going to talk about animators next, specifically animators related to the movie Sausage Party, which came out last week. It debuted, I think it was second behind Suicide Squad. It made something like 30 something million in the first weekend, which is a success. I mean, given that it's an R-rated movie and, you know, it's an R-rated comedy cartoon. I mean, that in and of itself is rare, but one that actually cleared the amount of money that it took to make it, that's also kind of notable and surprising. I haven't seen it yet. I know you've seen it. We're not necessarily talking about it as the show, mainly because that deficit, or not deficit, the discrepancy between how much it made and how much it cost to make, it was pretty significant given that it made its money back already. There was an article kind of pumping it up in the website. I think it's Cartoon Brew is the website. They had an interview with the creators of it, and there was a minor drama that blew up over the weekend, which is that a bunch of the animators anonymously started commenting in the comment section underneath it, saying the reason that it was so cheap to make was because they were demanding, they were threatening the animators and other people on the staff with termination if they didn't stay for, you know, mandatory free overtime, essentially, which is really not a thing.
Pretty sure that's not legal.
Pretty sure. I don't. I mean, the other thing that's kind of damning about it is a lot of those animators were not credited, and some people are saying that that's because they were let go, and some people were saying that was done in retaliation for them not, you know, playing along when it came to doing the, you know, doing the overtime and whatever else. There has since been a movement to get those people credited in the IMDb page for the movie, but in the actual credits of the movie, the list is something like 50 animators, but the actual number is something like 80. And it's unclear because they don't release the names of everyone, and they haven't correlated back like why some names are and some names aren't there. The story is still developing, but it does point to kind of a pattern in Hollywood about like overworking certain folks. this came up a couple years ago with The Life of Pi, how the animation studio behind that, in that case it was a computer graphics animation, although I'm sure it's a similar process as Sausage Party was computer animated. The folks behind a lot of the special effects in Life of Pi, which didn't it win the Academy Award for that?
It did,
but the company that did the special effects had been shuttered because they had been essentially paid next to nothing in their process, and it was unsustainable as a company after the movie was completed. It's kind of sad when you see that, because that means that there probably won't be another movie like that. You know, it does kind of mean that those folks are scattered to the wind. There's no continuity necessarily in those industries. It's also just like a bummer when you hear about it. It really sours the news about how well it's doing. I mean, I was excited to see, you know, similarly with Deadpool. It's like, yes, an R-rated movie can actually make money with audiences. People are adults. or literally adults want to see a movie and enjoy it. You know, I think that's one of the reasons I'm you know, aside from you know, what sounds like a horrible editing job, one of the reasons I was kind of turned off by Suicide Squad was that it got a PG-13 rating, and it's like, come on, you can do this. It doesn't have to be like a hard R. It just has to be like, we weren't worried about the rating. We just wanted to get the story out, you know, or we wanted to get the action out. We wanted to have a specific look. And that's just, it looks like that sense has not filtered into studio execs yet. But hopefully the thing with Sausage Party gets resolved and put together kind of, you know, quickly. Is it a movie that I should go see?
Well, now I feel conflicted after the story came out, because that bums me out as well.
Yeah.
That they were not treated well, and that the people who worked on it may not be compensated as they should have been.
Yeah.
But it's really funny. I was crying. I was laughing so hard. It's really well made. The animation is great. They did a really good job. It is also very disturbing. There are things I cannot unsee. I feel weird recommending this movie to people because it's fucked up. But it's funny.
They'll know what kind of person you are by the way you're recommending.
More about me. Yeah. the people I went and saw it with when we all got out of the theater, we all had a similar thing. I'm just like, ugh. Wow. That happened. I can't believe they did that in a movie with food.
Yeah.
it wasn't a, oh, I'm hungry now, let me go get some food. Like, I'm just going to go home for a while and not look at that.
Okay. Well, I think a movie that provides that visceral of a reaction is at least recommendable on that.
I do have to give them credit. It's the same guy or the same people behind it were the ones who did This Is the End.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Rogen and those guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it has that same style of like they commit to the premise.
Uh huh.
They don't do the Suicide Squad thing. Like they committed to the premise of the movie and executed it in an extreme fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, and that counts for a lot. I mean,
yeah.
Even if it's I mean, because it helps you suspend disbelief if the characters seem, you know, committed, even though it seems improbable or silly. I mean, we're talking about like anthropomorphic food.
Yeah, so. It's an anthropomorphic food movie that in itself is actually a morality tale. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And there is one cameo, or not cameo, one of the people who voices one of the food is not who you think it is.
Okay.
Like when they actually reveal in the movie who does the voice.
Huh.
And I had no clue that they were doing the voice. It was very well done. I'm not going to spoil it.
Okay. Okay. Well, we might spoil some things later. We'll get to spoiler territory traditionally at the end of the episode. But in the meantime, we're going to move on to some hacking news this week. There was a group which is they're calling themselves the Shadow Brokers, which I'm pretty sure is a Mass Effect reference.
Yeah, unless it's from something else as well, it's definitely a Mass Effect reference.
And they claim to have hacked a group called the Equation Group, which is a hacking group which was identified by I think it was those folks at Kaspersky Labs, which did antivirus and anti-malware stuff, but they also do a lot of internet security research, and they had tied the Equation Group to the NSA without saying they're the NSA, probably because they don't want to be investigated by the NSA. But whether the Equation Group is the NSA or not, it's notable because they what the Shadow Brokers folks did was they hacked into this website and they dumped like the log file of what they have access to. And it does, like the code names of things do apparently, according to people in the know, that they do line up with code names of like rootkits and exploits of firewalls and routers that are ones that are documented by other leaks from the NSA and from the Equation Group. So it does seem to be a legit thing. They're asking for, I think it's 100 million bitcoins or something like that to release more stuff about it. They're offering the hack tools to the highest bidder. In any case, that ends up being something like $500 million.
Yeah, it's 1 million bitcoins. Oh, okay. $568 million.
Yeah, that's a little more reasonable. 100 million bitcoins would be like a lot of money. But it's kind of crazy. It's showing that there's, you know, this comes on the heels of a Russian hacker group, you know, taking responsibility for hacking the DNC, Democratic National Committee's like servers and stuff, and just last week doxing a bunch of workers there, which again, doxing not a thing. The last bastion of kind of internet or identity in the time of the internet is your personal information, and that sucks. So. But it's interestingly timed regarding the release of the information. I read in a different article that Edward Snowden, who famously, you know, absconded with a bunch of, you know, CIA, or was it NSA? I don't know. I thought it was CIA. I think it was CIA. A bunch of documents and release them, you know, to say like, hey, this stuff is going down and it's real bad, you know, kind of as a whistleblower, commented on this hack and says that this is not something that's unheard of. What's unheard of is that the group is publicly claiming that they got it. Like there's definitely like kind of hacking in both directions, kind of on a quiet Cold War level between the US and Russia is what Edward Snowden's saying. And this coming out and being, you know, attributed as, hey, look, we potentially compromised a US server, is saying that they think it's like a diplomatic posturing move, or Edward Snowden surmises it's that, because it's saying that they want to see what the reaction is, given that, you know, some data potentially has already been leaked. It really sets up what I see is, you know, kind of a more of a return to kind of a slightly more active Cold War about internet hacking and that being kind of more and more of a thing, like as it comes up, which is kind of disturbing because some of the tools that they were looking to sell were ones that are based on that are not just information hack kinds of things. They're things like the Stuxnet hacks, which were hacking things related to I think the most famous one that they were trying to do was hack a nuclear power plant that was in like a foreign country.
It was in Iran.
Yeah,
they're shutting down their nuclear reactors.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy. like hacking and stealing information, I think, is one thing, but hacking things that actually affect physical things directly, that's really, really nuts. So,
watch, you know, Mr. Robot on USA. No, seriously though, watch Mr. Robot. That's great.
Yeah, apparently I have to. I've been told this by multiple people. I have a couple more shows in the queue. I did just finish Stranger Things, which we can talk about, you know, during spoiler territory if we like.
I don't want to spoil that for anybody.
No, it's
everyone
real good.
Needs to just watch it.
Yeah, I agree. But let's move back into the flow of what we were talking about. We were talking a little bit about the internet. So we're going to stick with the internet, specifically around privacy and the internet. Gmail had a class action lawsuit against Gmail and Google for monitoring and reading of emails. It's been I think it's abundantly clear to anyone that's used Gmail that Google does read your mail, because the ads that come up are targeted to you. So there is some link between the content of the mails and the ads that were created. So I think I want to say it was maybe even 2013, but there was a class action lawsuit attempted a few years ago regarding this. And the class was actually dismissed. The class part of it was dismissed because they couldn't formulate who was suing. And I think part of that was because the users of Gmail, in accepting to use Gmail, I'm sure there's a EULA somewhere that no one has read, because that's not a thing at all. And and so the class was dismissed out of hand. But this different lawsuit, which looks like it's going to proceed, is made up of people who don't use Gmail but have interacted with folks that are using Gmail, and they're saying that their mails were involved in Gmail's system. And once it goes into Gmail's system and those mails are read, then, you know, their privacy is violated. They're suing on behalf of those folks using the saying that by opening the mails and then, you know, scanning them for whatever they're scanning them for, ostensibly for ad generation, they're breaking the Federal Wiretap Act, which I think is probably a thing. That's really interesting, mainly because Gmail did just not too long ago enable SSL everywhere, so it's in theory encrypted from end to end upon hitting the Gmail server to when you read it. The problem is, in that interim, anytime that it's decrypted, or once it's decrypted, Gmail can see it too. So just remember that if you're using Gmail. Or even if you're not, apparently, because if you email anyone with Gmail, you have to assume that something can read it. So that's a thing. Like I said, this time the class is certified by the judge, and the judge is not throwing out the preliminary arguments. So it's going to proceed. That'll be a really interesting case, because it's not just Gmail that hosts mail, even though it seems like everybody has a Gmail account. The interesting thing it speaks to is that Gmail and Google argued that they read the mail as part of normal business, because they're creating ad revenue based on those targets. What the suit is alleging is that that's not a necessary thing for them to do. It's just something they do because they can, which I think is true. it's one of those things where Google has a lot of money, and they're going to be a target of suits kind of regardless. This is just one that I think actually has merit, and it also deals with internet privacy, which is, like we've said before in the past, a thing whether companies want us to believe it or not. wholly moving away from privacy, but not away from technology, as we generally do on the show. We're going to talk about GPS, the global positioning system of satellites that orbit the Earth and tell, they can, you know, triangulate, or yeah, it is triangulate, right? Or it's actually, they use three, if you use three satellites or more, you can actually tell elevation and stuff too, because we're talking about a 3D surface that is the face of the Earth. And there's all sorts of stuff that's in place around GPS. It's been up and running since, like, I want to say the 80s, at least, you know, to start, and then, you know, really getting into it in the 90s. And what's interesting is that there was a article this week about Australia, and specifically that the GPS coordinates for a lot of stuff in Australia is wrong. And wrong by a pretty good amount, wrong by, you know, as much as 5 feet kind of generally. And the reason it's wrong is because Australia is moving, just like a lot of other land masses are moving because of plate tectonics.
Thanks a lot, plate tectonics.
The landmass that include the Pacific plate, I believe, is the one that includes Australia, is moving at something like 70 millimeters a year, which isn't very much, except when you add it up over the amount of time that's involved in this, which they started doing the measurements in 1994, and since then it's moved something like a meter and a half. In that amount of time, you take 70 millimeters and multiply it by 20, and it gets up there. So it's surprising the amount of it like I said, it adds up over time, and 5 feet is pretty significant. I mean, if we're talking about houses, it's not going to say your house is someone else's house unless you have one of those really, really, really tiny homes from that Learning Channel show. By the way, Learning Channel is not that name is real wrong. That's not a thing. But 5 feet is pretty significant, especially when you start thinking in terms of really precise delivery mechanisms. That is, you know, what is it? Cruise missiles.
I don't know that they're using the same GPS.
They might. I think they're. It's. I think they are using GPS. It's just they're on military frequencies. I don't know if they have separate satellites for that. Maybe they should still update the maps, regardless. But the other thing that it mentioned is that drone deliveries, which are supposedly coming, if they ever get FAA clearance. I guess in Australia they have their own FAA, probably, because they have, it's just a different A, but yeah, if they're going to deliver stuff via drone, they would most likely be using GPS coordinates, and you don't want to try and bring it to the front door and end up bringing it, you know, through the bathroom window or something like that. So
you need your pizza in the right place.
So that's something that has to be calibrated, and I found it interesting that it's specifically Australia. I don't know if it's just because it's a continent that's wholly within a single tectonic plate, so they can say that it's all just moved this much in this amount of time. I really wonder how it works for countries where there are faults that divide things, like in California, where there's the San Andreas Fault, and there's stuff on the west side of it and some on the east side of it. I'm sure that drift is significant too. It'd be interesting to dive into that. If we have any geologist friends of the podcast, my brother-in-law, it would be nice to hear from them to see if there's any more interesting stuff about this. kind of staying in the outdoors and stuff that happens to the outdoors. Naturally, there are a bunch of monuments in Washington, D.C. that are accumulating a biofilm. It's essentially like a mold or a mildew. It's some kind of living thing which is living in the little pits and crevices of the surface of the marble on a bunch of monuments. This article specifically talked about the Jefferson Memorial, but it's the kind of thing where it's really hard to kind of eradicate, because marble is without damaging the marble underneath it, because the marble underneath it is white and the thing that they're trying to scrub off is black. So it's very difficult to, you know, remove it in a way that doesn't necessarily damage the marble either, you know, physically or, you know, discolors it or anything. It's apparently a problem. It's something that is happening on a bunch of monuments in Washington, D.C. It's interesting the way they are going to combat it. The article says that they're trying out like 10 different essentially like antibacterial like processes in this like little test spot on the I guess on like the, it's like when you get you know, shampoo, and it says, hey, you know, just to make sure it doesn't have any ill effects, like test it on like a small part of your hair in the back of your head to see if it does anything to it. It's that kind of thing. They're testing like 10 different processes to get rid of the biofilm, which I think is good. You want to test all of those. But the story really buries the lead about the ways they're trying to combat it, because one of the ways they're trying to combat it is lasers. And I don't know why that's not just first. That should be the headline, in my opinion. America uses lasers in Washington, D.C. to fight evil biofilm. I think it's
America uses lasers to make Washington, D.C. whiter?
Okay, I could see how that could be. Could be taken out of context, yeah. But yes, lasers are a thing. I hope lasers work, because that would just be awesome. I want to be a guy running, you know, lasers around a building. It's just, I want that on my resume. I do.
Now you're going to have to go work for the National Park Service.
Well, one other company that we could work for, or we're interesting to see what they're doing, is Audi, and they're you know, they're part of the Volkswagen Group, so they're on that horrible Dieselgate shit list. I, full disclosure, have an Audi, which is affected by this, so I will be in the market for a new car in some amount of time. But one of the things that Audi is doing technologically is they're changing, or they're running in the new, in their new lines of cars, completely digital dashboard. So the display, you know, right behind the wheel where it's normally the speedometer and everything else, it's, going to be a screen, so that, it could show, everything in a number of ways, all of which can be, you know, tweaked potentially by the user. It could show a lot more data or less data depending on what you want. And one of the things that they are looking to show on that electronic dashboard, that digital dashboard, is red light information. So a lot of major cities are centralizing their light timing systems. I think LA just recently did it. And they what that does is they can time lights more efficiently and change them centrally rather than going down to the little boxes that are, you know, at intersections and then shutting off an intersection for a while and having people freak out about how to take turns when they get up to the intersection because they're all flashing red lights. But centralizing them so they can do things like change the light timing based on time of day, or even just based on traffic flow, if they can measure the number of cars going through a particular area, or change things based on you know, events in the city, like if there's a game, they can, you know, have traffic flow more smoothly or differently around a, you know, a stadium or a concert venue or something like that. And what Audi is doing is they're partnering with the folks that make those systems to say, hey, if you can publish that data to us, we can display it in the car. So in the demonstration video, they have a they show a red light and then a countdown on it, so you can tell how long your red light is going to last. I can only think of this in terms of every car racing game I've ever played. When the little countdown comes in and you have to make the checkpoint or whatever, I don't necessarily want to see how long it's for the red lights to go. Although, you know, that would also be cool if you like to jump off of red lights, which I kind of do. But it would be really interesting to see how long that green light is going to last, and whether you have to slow down because it's going to turn yellow and then red real fast before you get up to the intersection. I don't know how good of an idea it is to necessarily put it in the dashboard, because you're looking down at it instead of up at the traffic and the people that might be walking through the intersection, even if the light is green for you. But it is an interesting piece of information, and it's a neat way to leverage the technology that's out there. What do you think, Brent?
I want it.
I thought we talked last show about how you were going to get a Mercedes, so the fireman could cut you out of it using the app.
No, they need to just expand that app to all the cars.
Yes, yes. And I think one of the things they talk about in the demo video is increasing the communication. So it's not just one way, right? The way this is set up is that the city planners or whoever, run the civil engineers that run the light timing and everything, that would feed into the car. But what would be more interesting, and what the video hints at, is that the cars could feed that information back, and it could be more useful for the traffic systems to know the actual traffic rolling through it, and not a theoretical thing based on people literally counting cars, like standing. That's what they do. They stand on street corners and count the number of cars that come through and then write them down. This is an actual, like, paid thing that's a thing that people do, and having that crowdsourced live, I think, is a more interesting way to do it. And then the next step would be having the cars talk to each other, because then they can tell, hey, you're getting into my lane, or I'm going to move over, so maybe signal something to the driver. Or who knows if drivers are even really driving. We've talked about self-driving cars in the past, and I think self-driving cars on their own is a thing, but once the self-driving cars can talk to each other and optimize that traffic a lot better, that's really a thing. That's really interesting. So we'll see. Audi, maybe you're not so bad after all, Audi. I don't know, though. There's probably something they're doing, quietly. I don't know. The Volkswagen Group did just get there was just an announcement that the larger diesel cars, the ones that were not included in the buyback program that was just announced a month ago, actually have an even bigger issue with them that makes them out of compliance. So that's still to come. So the Volkswagen thing is not going away. There are all sorts of problems. Hopefully Audi will release the kind of specs for this, and then other companies will pick it up, just in case Audi and Volkswagen don't exist after this lawsuit kind of goes through. But technology in the road is coming. That's definitely a thing. I still really like driving, though, so I hope that there is some facility to be able to kind of still drive a car and kind of enjoy it and not just be a passenger in a car. Hopefully that doesn't mean that I have to go to a driving experience racetrack thing. Although I would like to do that. That would be fun. Maybe not with my car. I don't think it would be very fun to try and throw those through some corners, but we'll see. In any case, we're going to move, like we said, to spoiler territory, and we're going to talk about the new Jason Bourne movie.
Yes, I went and saw Jason Bourne, and spoiler alert, it sucks. Don't go see it. Save your money. I would recommend going on either Hulu or Amazon Prime and watching Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. That just came up on both those services. It's a much better use of your time.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't see it. Or watch Stranger Things on Netflix.
Yes.
Don't watch Mr. Robot on Amazon. Don't watch. There's so many better ways to spend your time. Because if you like the Bourne movies, you've already seen this movie. But a better version of it.
Oh, yeah. That's what I've heard too. I also didn't see the new Jason Bourne movie. It seems odd to me. Like, I don't really understand why it was made, except if the you know, the original folks, you know, didn't want to end the Bourne franchise with the what was it called? Legacy? Was that that one?
Ultimatum was the last Matt Damon one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Legacy was it. I don't know. Fuck that movie. Don't watch it.
Yeah, don't watch that one either. instead watch Jeremy Renner in Rogue Nation.
Yeah, watch Jeremy Renner in Rogue Nation. Actually, I liked Legacy, but this was the worst Bourne movie.
Okay, wow.
I liked all the other ones. I liked the Bourne movies. I liked the other ones. This one didn't do it for me.
Got it. Okay. That's easy enough. We're out of
spoilers. You know what? If you really need to watch some Bourne, watch the promo that they did for Bourne Ultimatum on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Huh.
Just search Jimmy Kimmel, Jason Bourne, and that would be a better way to spend 5 minutes rather than 2 hours watching that movie.
Easy peasy. I'm glad we got through spoiler territory without spoiling it too bad.
But, you can't spoil, the only spoiler is it's the same plot as all the other movies.
Yeah. Is it at least good fighting? Because most of the fighting in the, at least the first, definitely in the first one, was inspired by a lot of Filipino martial arts, which is really hard to film because it's real fast.
No, there's not a lot of good fighting. The editing's too choppy.
No.
Like, Greengrass is beyond Greengrass. He's gone off the deep end. I think maybe there's 4 conversations in the whole movie that didn't take place over an earpiece. Oh. It's just people walking away from people.
Yeah. Oh, that's unfortunate. Oh, well. Well, maybe I'll watch the first one again and make myself feel better about the Bourne franchise. I do enjoy
Just watch the Jimmy Kimmel segment.
Okay.
That's the best thing to come out of the Bourne series.
Sounds good. Well, that's the show for this week. Like we've said at the beginning, we're marching on to episode 200, the animal style episode next week, or the 200th episode in 3 more weeks. If you'd like to join us for any of those episodes or anything in the future, or contribute to the show, either with a story or with a sponsorship, hashtag Moontent, we'd love it. Just tweet at us at Not A Thing Cast, or find us on Facebook. It's Not A Thing Podcast, or notathingpodcast.com, where you probably ended up downloading this this episode, unless you do it through iTunes. There's so many ways to find us and get to us. I really don't know if people are just paralyzed by the choice or what.
Well, if you're listening, you've clearly found us. So congratulations.
And that's actually you know, the majority of the things we want. We want people to kind of listen to the show and be excited by it. So we, you know, thank you for listening. We're gonna keep making them, and we'll talk to you in you know, when we get to that 200 and get really excited. But in the meantime, Brendan, I'll talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.